Hey yo, we about to tear it up. Yo,
break it down.
This right here is how we do it. Break it down.
Welcome to the Breaking Atoms podcast, where we break things down to the very last compound. My name is my name, but my real name is Chris Mitchell, aka The Actual Factual. I am flying solo this week, but on all days, big up to my co-host Sumit. He'll be back next week with a mouthful of swear words and offensive, inappropriate content. Before I go any further, I just want to thank all the listeners who are checking out the show. We really appreciate the fact that you reach out and you let us know what you're enjoying, where we can improve, and guests that you'd love to hear on future episodes. So whether you reach out to us publicly or privately, we appreciate you. So please continue to listen, subscribe, and leave reviews wherever possible. This week's guest is one of my favorite MCs, representing Lawrence, Massachusetts, affectionately known as Lawtown to those who love and live there. He goes by the name of Rex, and Rex is one of my favorite MCs because he really understands how to balance lyrical skill and poetic devices with the social and political content that I love, and he can still make the music enjoyable. He's worked with Pete Rock, DJ Premier, Knots, Apollo Brown, and a bunch of other people. So a Rex album and a track list to a new Rex album is something that I always look forward to seeing. So we spoke about how he embedded himself in Boston's hip hop scene, his business relationship with Brick Records, working with Static Selecta, how he comes up with acronyms, and we even got into how he stands barefoot on grass. We got in touch with Earth, and we definitely got in touch with history. So ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages, dogs, cats, people with jobs, people without jobs, hags and scallywags. This is Rex on the Breaking Atoms podcast. Check it out. Rex, Rhythmatic Eternal King Supreme, welcome to the Breaking Atoms podcast. How are you?
I'm blessed. Thank you for having me. Thank you for taking the time, beloved.
It's all good. It's all good. First of all, just want to check in with you. I know it's been a crazy few months. It's been a crazy year, 2020, and we're in 2021. How have you been maintaining? How's family, and how are you doing?
Yeah, you know, times have been crazy, but we continue to maintain on the same kind of regimen, you know, health and wellness. We're, you know, plant-based, focused on, you know, eating well, waking up to meditation and yoga. So the routine don't change. So it's all the same for us.
I was doing some research today, and I often make the mistake of saying that you're from Boston, and I know you represent Boston heavy, but you're actually from Lawrence, Massachusetts, affectionately known as Lawtown. Tell me, what is unique about Lawrence, Massachusetts, and what are some of your favorite things about the city?
So, yeah, like, you know, a lot of times I do get connected to Boston, which is like, you know, home away from home, and it's not too far from Lawrence, so I get the understanding. I got like my biggest breaks in Boston, so I get that. But Lawrence, the community I'm from is about, you know, 30 minutes north of Boston. It's a very small community, impoverished. A lot of individuals migrated either during the Black Migration north from the south, or like there are a lot of families from like the Dominican Republic, Jamaica, Haiti, Puerto Rico. The majority of individuals coming out of Dominican Republic, though. So like, you know, it's a community of individuals, again, like second, third generation families in a community that's really, like I said, poor and coming up on hard times. But we make do, and like, so myself, Terminology, Static Select, a lot of individuals who have made some ways for ourselves come from that community. Crumb Snatcher, rest in peace to Scientific. So a lot in the hip hop community who are in the underground and the know about like our community. Yeah.
Did your family migrate from Dominican Republic?
My family, no. Like, so my parents come from the South. My father's from Virginia. My mom's is from South Carolina. The only thing that differentiates us from like individuals from certain islands is a boat ride, right?
Good point.
If you're talking about individuals who are in Cuba, Jamaica, Haiti, Cuba, like, you know what I'm saying, wherever you are in that Caribbean, or if you're in the South, like, you know, the only thing that differentiates you is a boat ride, or if you have individuals who are native to the island, you have Tainos in the Caribbean, or you have, you know, a lot of the Geechee and different tribes that were in the South. So, you know, our fan got Geechee and like different native tribe connections, but also part of the diaspora.
Yeah, no, good point. Sticking with Boston, I know you've got a long-standing relationship with Brick Records. How did you hook up with them, and, you know, what are some of the things you enjoy about working with them, because you've worked with them for so long?
After I left UMass Amherst, I was a student at UMass Amherst. That's where I went to college. And a summer I came back my first year and went to Boston instead of going back to Lawrence. I spent that whole summer in Boston. And that was a period where, you know, it was big on ciphers, like real cipher circles where cats were like freestyling for real and, you know, building their street cred off of those ciphers. And that's where I first got, like, you know, my feet wet with a lot of the local Boston individuals such as Esoteric and Edo G and Acrobatic. And there was a group by the name of Schizophrenics, Checkmark specifically, who offered me an opportunity to get on a vinyl of his, and that vinyl was being put out by Brick Records. When I got on that record, the rest was history. They signed me to my first deal.
Okay, all right. And you've been working with them ever since, right?
Absolutely. But like, what I've been doing is like quite similar to what cats do nowadays. I was doing back then, 20 years ago, I was like focused on doing one-off deals, like a license for like one contract for a record. Our very first record we put out, the next record I was like, I'm gonna do it independently, because Master P and the whole out the trunk phase was going on in the South, and like, we wanted to mimic a lot of what they were doing and get our feet wet on the possibilities of gaining a lot of income independently. And so that's what I did on the second record. But after that, you know, I kept on, you know, I always kept my options open. Either I could sign a deal with the label, or we could do something independently.
Okay, so is that the reason why there was like a 5-year gap between Reckless and Grey Hairs? It's because you were doing an independent thing, like 100%?
Absolutely not. What actually happened is I moved to Florida. That was the first time. I'm living in Florida now again. And that was the first time I moved to Florida. I had gotten married. You know, I'm since divorced, but I got married and had my first son. And so I was attempting to balance life as a new husband and new father. And doing music, and I wasn't making any money at that time. So really, it really didn't make sense for me to be doing it. And I was really going to wrap up everything. I was going to call it quits altogether at that point in time. And so that long gap between Reckless and Grey Hairs was me trying to like come to terms with that crossroads of what I was going to do with the rest of my life. And then Static came down South and he let me know that he had just started the new imprint Show Off, and he was like, try one more album. And that's when we dropped Grey Hairs.
Okay. And that's when I first heard of you, because I'm a big Static Selector fan. We actually had him on the pod a few weeks ago. And I've got to say, Grey Hairs, I often tell people that after 2003, I fell down this rabbit hole of independent hip hop. You know, I've got my own internet, my own computer, and you're one of the artists that I discovered very early on. And Grey Hairs is an album I still listen to, like, to this day.
Well, I appreciate that. That's beautiful to hear, fam. And, yo, I mean, Static deserves his flowers for everything that he's done for the culture and what he's done for our city and what he's doing now, like, you know, with all the connections, the bigger connections, the waves that he's done. You know, every time we used to walk down the streets and he used to tell me all the people he was going to be working with, I was like, man, you out of your mind. I couldn't see it coming from where we were coming from, but like, you know, he just always had a bigger vision than all of us. So
he deserves his flowers. And, you know, I was, you know, my co-host as well, Sumit, shout out to him. We were very, very forward about giving him his props, because he's one of our, like, when we started this podcast like 2 years ago, he was on our list of people like, we want to speak to Static Selector. Like, he was like on our A-list, and we finally got to speak to him a few weeks ago, just before he released a new album. So shout out to Static Selector once again.
Absolutely.
Sticking with Static Selector, like, you know, you don't have to go through the whole list. What are some of your favorite songs that he's produced for you?
I mean, oh, you're saying for me, like, you know, Static's done give me some of his best beats. I lucked out, you know, like, you know, my favorite, I think, would be Mr. Nobody, though. I love that record, the soul behind it, and the and just like the heart that he put into it. A newer record that I just did with Pharoah Monch, The Complex, is up there. You know, but there's a plethora of records. And also there's a slew of productions that he did on like mixtapes that I had in Between the Lines, Volume 1 and 2, which were like incredible records. And, you know, him still coming into his own as a producer, but it like, you know, him being very creative in his thought process and how he approached, you know, his production technique. So like I was a big fan of a lot of that stuff early on as well. But you know, he's worked with everybody, so like, you know, he's done some incredible things with, like, you know, the stuff he's done with 2 Chainz and Bun B and Paul Wall, like, to see that, to see the stuff that's going on with him, never compromising his artistic ability and doing something with the South. It was real dope to see, like, you know, the North and the South come together on a lot of those records, man.
Yeah, no, it's funny because, I mean, I wouldn't say I'm the biggest Paul Wall fan. I've liked a few of his songs over the years. But when I saw him do that EP with Static Selector, I'm like, you know, Static Selector is one of those people. If he works with you, he either makes me a fan of you or it's just an instant buy. I don't care who you are. You could be MC Nobody, produced by Static Selector. I would at least check it out because he's got that name power. So it's a very similar thing with you. Like when I saw his name attached to you, I was like, okay, I'm gonna check this out. Then I became a fan of you. So yeah, it's just how it works. It's that rabbit hole again.
Yeah, he's one of those cats. It's like DJ Premier, like, you know, like he's following in the reins and the steps of Primo and Pete Rock and like the ones who, like, you're just like, yo, if their name's attached to it, I gotta touch it. You know what I'm saying?
And yeah. So, yeah, no, definitely, definitely. I want to talk about "Pray for Me" on the Grey Hairs album. Like, I love that song because it reminds me of KRS-One, and I know KRS-One is one of your biggest inspirations.
Yeah, absolutely.
You say don't get offended, but it's hard for some. I would imagine it's hard for some people not to be offended by that song because you touch on some things in that song.
Absolutely.
What I want to pick your brain on is that it came across to me that you were very critical of New York at the time. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, you were saying that New York was somewhere you look to for inspiration, and you're talking about there's no more classics, no more Shook Ones to blast in the whip. Can you break down why you actually said that, and was there any backlash from you saying that on the song?
Nah, you know what I'm saying? Like, I meant every word, and like, you know, obviously I have a strong connection to New York and spend a lot of time in New York to this day. And, you know, I work with a lot of New York artists and the reality is, like, the individuals who knew what I was talking about, there was no anger or no animosity for what I was saying because I was just dropping jewelry and waxing poetic on what I thought was necessary to come out of New York. Like, we know what it, when you looked at New York as the place, where things are beginning, just like how Atlanta is now to a degree. You know, if where Cats was looking for inspiration and focused on, like, you know, where the culture was moving and where the heartbeat was, it was always New York. Not to mention, you know, getting it started in New York. And so with a lot of the stuff that was going on during that period in time, I was really fed up, you know, so like I had to express my opinion. There were no sideline instances where individuals pulled me aside or had anything to say, but you know, I've always been an artist that had to express exactly what was going on in my heart.
Yeah, no, and it's one of your best songs, in my opinion.
I appreciate that.
It's one of your best songs. One other line hit me deep, and I'll tell you why. The part about Bill O'Reilly don't respect you in no suit. You're still a coon in their eyes. You'll soon realize. I heard you say that when I was walking through the financial capital of London in a suit. And it really, really hit me because I was always taught, you know, wearing a suit, people will respond to you in a certain way. And it's oftentimes more positive. But then I also saw the flip side of things, that even though you're still in a suit, because of the history of racism and, you know, prejudice and stereotypes and all of these things in a melting pot, you can still be looked upon less favorably. Why did you write that line? And was it something that you experienced in your own life?
not something specifically like a specific instance, but you know, us as melanated individuals across the globe, it don't matter where we are on this planet, you know, we all got this we got this understanding just naturally, just about who we are and how we're perceived by the general populace, right? So my intentions are not to, like, you know, to pretend that, like, you know, I'm something that I'm first of all not, or secondly, I'm not going to, you know, attempt to assimilate or be a part of, like, a specific culture just because that's what the accepted notion is. You know, mm-hmm. I couldn't keep a 9-to-5 because I wasn't going to pretend or use my white voice in, you know, certain settings to, like, be able to, you know, get by. You know, not to judge anybody else or to, like, put, I get it. You know what I'm saying? I get the reason why it's difficult and why we, you know, act and behave certain ways. But, like, my intentions are always to say I wear my heart on my sleeve. I'm always the person that I am. And so, like, for a real good example, like, you know, touring in Europe, there was a MC, I'm just going to say the MC homie's name. My man Acrobatic is my brother, my beloved brother, right? Mm-hmm. And I was on tour with him and Ed OG and Terminology one period of time. And we did the, like, Eastern Standard Tour, and we went all over Europe, right? And I don't remember what country we were in. I think it was Germany. But, you know, Terminal from Lawrence, like, a little different than Boston, a little more rowdy acting. During that period of time, like, my mind frame is way different now. But, like, I was in the airport, and I'm like acting up a little bit. You know what I mean? And so, you know, Edo had pulled me aside and was like, "Yo, Act got something to say about you, like, you know, kind of, you know, acting foolish in front of these people because of how they're looking at you. You know, and because of how they're looking at you, that's how they're looking at us." And my mind frame was like, I don't care what anybody's viewpoint on who I am is at any point in time, because if I'm walking down, like, when I'm walking down the airport runway and I'm reading Nietzsche, or I'm reading Ayn Rand, or I'm doing anything that has to do with reading a book versus me acting unrowdy, they're still going to see a nigga. You know what I'm saying? They're looking at it the same way. They're just seeing, like, what you said, like, what we discussed, the nigga in a suit or nigga with a book, or it still carries that connotation. So we take that word nigga and we flip it, or we look back to our ancestors and we say niggas, and not that term that's, like, a little degrading how they view us. But regardless, we carry ourselves how we carry ourselves, and we feel free to be our natural selves. And anybody's view on the outside really don't matter.
That's right. Yeah, well said, well said. Acronyms. You're really good with the acronyms. Not just your name, but on the Greatest X album, you had Beef, which, correct me if I'm wrong, it stands for Brothers Egos, something fatalities. It was with me just now, and I've forgotten it.
Brothers Egos equal fatalities. You got it.
Yeah, and you got hip-hop, Her Infinite Power Helps Oppressed People.
I can't take credit for that. That's KRS-One.
I was going to ask, because he said that on his album.
I definitely can't take it. Like, and it's crazy, because a lot of people, they always connect that acronym to me. But hip-hop, that acronym comes from KRS-One, man.
Okay, so what's your thing with acronyms? Like, do you have a list of them somewhere, or do you just come up with them? Like, how does that work for you?
Honestly, it comes from KRS-One. I was a big fan of KRS-One very young, and, like, you know, he had the knowledge reign supreme over nearly everybody, and that was just huge to me. That was big in my life, and so was the Her Infinite Powers Help Oppressed People. Like, the message behind those words, like, matters like infinitely for me. So, like, it was only natural that, like, you know, I would find connections in my own. Other than the name Rex, like, Rex has been my only name other than when I was, like, 11 years old. My name was MC Rock. Because Okay. Everybody's name had an MC in front of it. So my name was Rock when I was a kid. But other than that, like, it's been Rex, man. And I've always rocked with that.
I was going to say that your acronyms never sound forced.
Nah, they gotta be natural, man. You know what I'm saying? They gotta flow naturally and sound smooth. You know, just like this new album, it just gotta make sense. You know, if it don't flow smooth, then it isn't worth saying. And I definitely feel like, you know, the hunger inside never gets satisfied. That's a beautiful acronym. Things. That's the new album. The objective always is to like just have a message behind it. You gotta forgive me. I've just got into my son's school,
and
we're gonna keep talking, but I gotta pick up these books.
Okay, it's all good. Let's talk about the new album though. Things. The hunger inside never gets satisfied. What was the first song recorded for the project? And when did you know, okay, it's album time now?
The first record I believe I recorded might have been Ice's Daughter.
Beautiful song.
Yeah, Ice's Daughter. Like it was a mood setter. That one was one of the early ones, and I had Ego and Brotherly Love. Some of that stuff towards the middle of the album was some of the earlier stuff that I recorded.
Okay, so you mentioned Ice's Daughter. How did you meet Apollo Brown? And how's your relationship grown? Because you've done a few songs with him now.
I met Apollo Brown at South by Southwest. I was the typical networking situation, and like we had been building with various cats, and just he was someone that like I got introduced to. I don't remember who by, but someone on a strip had pulled me aside and was like letting me know this is the homie and what he doing, and we just hit it off, man. It was love, and like, you know, we had built about, we got to build, you know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Forward. So that's really what that was.
So sticking with the new album, you've got a song on there called Rachel Green, and what was really interesting about that to me was the fact that you tackled privilege, but you told the story of a white woman. Why did you do it that way, considering that you have no experience of being a white woman?
Well, so the main takeaway was like, first and foremost, I wanted to, there were layers to it. And the first layer being the television show Friends. And, you know, I'm a fan of the show, even though like the show is definitely a knockoff of the television show Living Single. I can look at it and appreciate it for its artistic merits. You know, save for the fact that like it is definitely a knockoff. You know what I'm saying? Like I don't appreciate that aspect, but I'm not gonna kid myself on how I felt about the show. So what I wanted to do is I wanted to take someone who is beloved by society and as a whole. I wanted to take somebody loved so dearly and adored not just Western culture, but specifically in white Western culture, right? And I wanted to flip the whole name in a way that it should really be addressed. I wanted to address the negative aspects of someone who the Western culture holds so positive, right? And it's interesting because if you look at the name Rachel Green, also in the show, her middle name is Karen.
Oh, for real?
Yeah, in the show, her name is Karen. Her middle name is Karen. That's like a hidden little piece.
Right, that's sick.
Yeah, that's okay. There, right? Like, we'll talk about that. So, but the thing is, we know this idea of white privilege and what we see from the outside looking in. But if we take it from the inside looking out, then we can assess it and be like, look, you know, look, we can kind of put the lens on ourselves and see the negatives within ourselves, even if we're not that individual. Because when we start to put our view, like see it from other people's eyes and from their lens, then we can like kind of self-assess to a degree, even if it isn't really us. You know what I mean? So I wanted to approach it that way. I wanted to approach it with a bit of that, like kind of, and I've done that on other records where like, you know, I've spoken about the kind of privilege and that kind of understanding, and those records are out there. I did it on the song Hands Up Wink Wink, where I'm talking from the perspective of that kind of individual, kind of sarcastically, but you know, the reality being, you know, like how I truly feel about the situation, but it's being sarcastic and facetious, but the reality is we know how negative these individuals have been in history.
Yeah, no, it was I was on the treadmill when I was listening to it, and I was just like, this song is, it's it's comical in places, but I feel your approach with the bars is also quite cerebral, because it's almost like, did he really just say that? Like, it's true, but it cuts quite deep, but it's still palatable in a way. Does that make sense?
Absolutely, absolutely. And I mean, that was the objective overall.
Yeah, and then when you put the Jane Elliott at the end as well, that kind of gave it that academic gravitas, because we love Jane Elliott, and you know, absolutely, her name does hold weight. So I thought that was really slick.
Yeah, it's necessary to add, because you know, what we don't want to do is we want to address the topic, and we want to let individuals know that we understand that there are those of you, a select few, who actually understand and get it, and who hold themselves accountable and understand that they walk in the light with white privilege, and because of that, they have a lot of work to do within their own communities to speak to the topic we're addressing. That's very powerful. And it stings for a lot of individuals, but like, you know, who else to bring it home than Jane Elliott, who's our beloved aunt, our beloved mother, our beloved everything in this world of idiocy in terms of like color selections, like actually seeing color.
I definitely agree. Moving on to Benjamin Button, you said a line on there that rock bottom will teach you lessons that mountaintops never will. What are some of the lessons you've learned about yourself, you know, just through your journey in music? You know, it could be in recent years, it could be across the board, just, you know, two or three of the lessons you've learned about yourself.
First off, I got to give credit where credit's due. That's my beloved brother, Little Fame, the legendary Little Fame, who said, rock bottom would teach you lessons that mountaintops never will.
And, yes, you're correct. Apologies.
No, it's beautiful. It's beautiful. I feel the energy of what you're saying. And, you said a couple of lessons that I've learned, in the midst of all this that I ride by.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Just, you know, in general, it could be just about how you move in the music business, or, you know, Corey Christie, like, what have you learned about yourself that you didn't know, you know, prior to, let's just say, the last couple of years. Let's look at it in a more granular perspective.
So getting closer to like, I think throughout my entire life, I've been seeking and searching for spirituality and driven to like some kind of higher understanding that kind of connects the dots with everything that I'm doing in my career as well. And to make sure that that the parallels between my career and my family life with my village and everything else that I've allowed to be a part of my life throughout my lifespan kind of coincides. And spirituality has been a key from day one. I've been like kind of lost in the sauce. I've clarified some of the muddied waters, and then right now I'm coming to like a very distinct clearing that allows me to be open to all kinds of forms of understanding. I read daily from the Bhagavad Gita, the Quran, the Bible. I read on Natarianism and Hinduism and Buddhism and various other forms of spirituality and ways of thinking. But I've been way more open to Eastern philosophies and Eastern ideals. And my studies now have led me closer to Natarianism and being one with Hermetic spirituality.
Okay.
And that has drawn me closer to an understanding of how to grow as an individual on a daily basis. The thing that I've been searching for most with that, I was never seeing growing up when my grandparents had me going knocking door to door as a Jehovah's Witness, or my mom had me jumping on that bus to make sure that I was going to Pentecostal church, or I was on the corner in the parks listening to the Five Percenters. All these things were various little stops along the road to the understanding that I'm at now. And I feel like I have so far to go, but I'm super happy and super excited about the journey that I've taken and where I'm headed now. And that's the first thing. And the second thing I would say is that, like, you know, above all else, like, if you're going to do this music thing, no matter what you're going to do in life, do it like you want to, like you want to breathe. Like, you can't do things just in the name of just doing them, and just kind of the redundancy and the continuance of, like, you know, the labor that you have to continue to go in a circle, and then it becomes a revolving door. You got to do things like seriously, like you want to breathe.
like your quest for water, like the things that matter the most, that are true necessities, whatever you want to do in your life, approach them with that kind of consistency and that constance, or don't approach them at all. You're gonna have a lackluster effect, and you're gonna just go with the motions of things. And so whenever I wake up in the morning, I'm very specific, and I'm very committed to the idea of how engaged I am to the first glass of water I drink, to the fact that like when I walk outside on a day-to-day basis, all these things connect to my standing with hip hop. You know, I talk to the trees. People may think I'm crazy. I talk to the trees. You know what I'm saying? I talk to the water. I talk to the grass. I make sure that I take my shoes off in the morning, and I get grounded out on the grass. And then, you know, like I connect with individuals with that loving admiration for life, and that life kind of transcends and enters into like everything else that I do. The same way I want water is the same way I want hip hop.
That was very deep.
I appreciate you, King. That's how I feel.
Yeah, you know what it is for me? You know, I think sometimes we feel we know the artists we listen to because we listen to their music, right? So I've been listening to you for, it's been 15 years, right? But to hear you talk about, you know, being connected to your first glass of water and taking your shoes off and connecting with the grass, these are things I would never have known. I don't think I would have ever even assumed that. But that's actually quite refreshing to hear that, because one of the things we want to do with the podcast is that, yeah, MCs like yourself, superheroes, we get that part, but we also want to show the human side and, you know, things that you do on a day-to-day basis. So that was really insightful. And talking about growing up in Pentecostal church, that's my background too. I come from a very similar background. It's the same thing.
Yeah.
It's the same thing. I think that also gives us an edge musically though.
Absolutely. I feel like all those different, all these different experiences that we encounter and everything that like, you know, enters into play for our daily life, affect and create the landscape and the true sound bed for what we do when we're using our canvas and we're using our paintbrush. You know, no matter what our artistic abilities are, because we're all creators. I don't care who we are on this earth. We're all creators. And whatever we're creating at, you know, our experiences define who we are going to be as a creator.
100%. Here at Breaking Atoms, we like to, it's not that we like to, I'm saying this incorrectly. We are legacy driven. We actually write it in our presentations. And I know you have a song on the new album called Legacy Driven. What do you want your legacy to be when it's all said and done? Firstly, as a man, secondly, as a father, and lastly, as a hip hop artist.
First, as a man, second, as a father, and then third, as a hip hop artist. I love that you put it that way. And that makes it very simple. Okay. So as a man, I want to make sure that I am the perfect reflection of the Most High. My objective is to consistently grow and transcend beyond a material earth that we live in, so that we're able to see like individuals who look upon me and look at me as an example. They're able to say that I knew something so much greater than the material that's around us. I knew something that was enlightened, that was elevated, that vibrated higher. So that's who I want to be as a man. I want to be more of a reflection of the Most High, the grand creator, the all, right? I want to be a reflection of that. As a father, I want to be able to pass on the ideas of, you know, generational wealth. And I want to pass on the ideas of, you know, a lot of the knowledge that we're going to receive. Like you can take the meat of it, even though I'm not a meat eater, you can take the meat of it as a metaphor. You take the meat of it and you discard the bone. So don't allow yourself to be so caught up in what everybody else has to say and take it for face value and take it as your science, but take the piece of it that makes sense, that you can actually grow and define yourself and define your being from, and then discard the part that's not so important for you and so important for you to grow with. So as a father, I just want to pass on that kind of information. As a hip hop artist, I want to make sure that I stay true to everything that I believe in. From the moment I stepped into this game, I want to pay homage and honor those who came before me, who were the elders who taught me and who gave me life to even be able to exist in this thing we call hip hop, that I can, call this my career, and that I can say that it saved my life. So I want to be an example for them, and I want to be an example for the ones who come after me. So I don't want to not do what I did for a period of time where I knocked those coming behind me and didn't really allow them to elevate and grow and let their plant flourish the way it's supposed to flourish. I want to be an example for them, and I want to listen to them and learn from them. And through that, I feel like I've done everything that I want to do as a man, as a father, and as a hip hop artist.
Wow. 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 You're good at this, Rex. You're good. You're good at this life thing, and you're good at this interview thing. I'm giving you your props and your flowers.
I appreciate that, King. For real. I appreciate you taking the time with me and giving me the platform to be able to spread my joy.
No, it's all good, man. Look, I love your music, man. It goes without saying. Let's wrap this up, though. I've got a hip hop question. The listeners love their hip hop, obviously. Who are or what are your five favorite hip hop albums from Boston Lawrence hip hop eyes?
Oh, whoa.
All right. Okay. You see, this is where we're taking it.
this is extremely tough, and I feel
you know what? I'll tell you what. Let me make it easy for you.
Put on the fire.
let me make it easy for you, right? Just name your favorites or the ones that come to mind. You're in your living room. I'm gonna listen to some Boston hip hop. What are you reaching for? It doesn't have to be five.
I mean, first and foremost, above all else, and a lot of cats don't immediately gravitate towards my man Acrobatic, but above all things, the first thing that comes to mind for me is Balance.
Great album.
Okay.
Remind my soul.
Mm. Yes, this is actually my favorite Boston song. Period.
What? Remind My Soul.
Yeah, Remind My Soul is my favorite. Act knows already. Like, the moment that joint comes on, it's forget it. It's over. That's, and
it's,
done with.
It's a power. It's a powerful song, and that was I think that actually sparked the career of Illmind, if I'm correct.
Yes, absolutely. So I mean, yeah. I love that project. Edo G, A Face in the Crowd.
Okay, that's an interesting pick.
Really?
Yeah, it's an interesting pick because I don't really hear people mention that particular album.
I mean, people can go to the first album and throw it out there, but honestly, because My Own Worst Enemy can be in there, but
that's my one.
Yeah, but you know what I'm saying? I would say A Face in the Crowd and also Arts and Entertainment, even though that's not just a Boston album.
Mm-hmm.
But that's an incredible collaborative album with him and Master Ace.
Indeed.
Term's first album is up there for me.
Okay.
Hold on. I hope this phone doesn't die. Let me see. I got a good percentage. I thought it was gonna die. But The Hood Politics, that's a big one for me. Hold on. Who else do I gravitate towards? For me, I don't listen to a lot of hip hop too. That's the other thing.
Okay, so what do you listen to? What's on your playlist?
I listen to soul music.
you know what's funny, man? So many people tell me that. I think we're a similar age.
I don't really listen to hip hop. Like, when I do listen to hip hop, it's like, you know, I like nowadays, like Toby and Wigway. I don't know if you know Toby.
I've heard of him, and I have to check him out. I've heard
he's somebody who I listen to. I listen to J. Cole's Dreamville Team. I love Earth Gang. Mm-hmm. I love real eclectic artsy stylings. I love artsy stuff like that, and like eclectic vibrations. You know, I'm a child of like the Fugees and things like that. So,
right.
You know, if it's hip hop, I like it to have substance, and it has to challenge me.
Yes.
Not only lyrically and being thought provoking, but also being the sound that has to challenge it.
My biggest artist is Stevie Wonder. You have Marvin, of course, but you know, like Gil Scott Heron and Nina Simone and I don't know why I'm doing. Oh, Curtis Mayfield, forget it, Curtis Mayfield. These are my vibrations, fam. These are what, like, you know, on a regular basis, what I'm listening to. If I'm not listening, like, I'm usually in my studies, man. I'm like, I'm reading books, and like, I'm either doing that or writing, and then, you know, being a creator. So like locally, like the ones who I love and adore the most, like Edo is right there, Acrobatics right there, Chum is right there. Those are my brothers, and then, you know, there are more that I respect and everything like that. But when it comes like to, like, you know, going to the albums, those are the ones I go to. And then there's my brother Lucky Dice, who did. He's another one who put out a great album that I love. It's called MOSA, Memoirs of a Starving Artist. That's another acronym.
Okay, I've not heard that. I need to check that out.
Yeah, check that out. Memoirs of a Starving Artist. He's a dope MC. MBS is another group that I rock with, Natural Born Spitters. You know, there's a plethora of dope artists that I rock with, that I love dearly, coming from home. But again, soul is where it's at for me.
You know what's a very, I think it's an under, I hate this term now, underrated. But I think it's an underrated album from your city or state, Mass. Elder Head Toucher, Destined for Greatness.
Oh, wow, brother, yes.
Come on now, Too Complex. Jeez.
Yes, absolutely. L gave me nightmares growing up, like making sure that I had to like get my pen game right.
Mm.
One of the early ones, like, I gotta be honest, like one of the earliest ones who scared me on the mic, like who I had to, like, you know, I had to make sure my pen game was super tight, was L the L Toucher.
Yeah, he's a very, very serious writer. And I think, I was saying this to Dar Adams last year when I spoke to him, I think Too Complex, I have a list of perfect rap songs, and I think Too Complex is on that list.
Yeah, he was on another level.
Yeah.
Always was on another level. Now go by Light Chief. I don't know if like L's been rhyming in a while, but like, yo, one of my early favorites, man.
Yeah, no, definitely. Like that first album, I was in the record store a few months ago when I was allowed in there. And that album on CD goes for £30, which is like $35, $40, somewhere in that region.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah. It's a rare gem.
Wow, yeah, like, yeah, that's absolutely true.
Yeah, it's a rare gem. Rex, we're gonna close, but before we close, can you let our listeners know where they can find you on social media and if you've got anything else you want to plug? I know you've got the new album. But just remind people where they can find you and, yeah, send any messages or vibrations out to the people.
I appreciate you for taking time with me and Breaking Matters and, like, just vibing with me. And it's a beautiful thing whenever I get an opportunity to talk to good energies and sharing good conversation. The best way to reach me is to go to my Instagram and look up Rex Hip Hop, R-E-K-S Hip Hop. And in my bio, you can find just about everything that you need to know about what's going on with your boy Rex.
Sounds great to me. Rex, thank you so much, not just for your time today, but just for being a dope hip hop artist, being reliable, being consistent, being one of those artists that I buy your records just off the strength. I don't need to hear anything. And you always have a platform and a home here at Breaking Atoms. And we do this podcast to celebrate people such as yourself. So thank you so much.
That's super appreciated. I thank you for saying that. And anytime you need anything my end, you just let me know, brother, and I'm there.
I appreciate it, man. You take care of yourself and, you know, give my regards to the family. Stay safe.
Likewise. Bless up.
Big shout out to Rex for coming through on the show. I hope you've enjoyed listening to his perspective and that you leave with some kind of jewel or information that's going to help you in whatever you're doing or wherever you're going. At the very least, please dig into Rex's catalogue. It's dope and it's very deep. My favourite albums are Grey Hairs, the self-titled joint, Straight No Chaser, The Greatest Unknown, and this new one, Things. The Hunger Inside Is Never Satisfied. Big up to DJ Kerosene, who is a listener of the show. He's actually worked with Rex in the past and he did some cuts on The Recipe from the Greatest Unknown album. So yeah, big up to DJ Kerosene on all days. We really appreciate you taking the time out to listen to the show. The hip hop community has experienced a lot of heartbreak and heartache over these past few weeks. So before I go, I want to say rest in peace to DMX, Black Rob and Shock G. We celebrate their lives and we honor them for their contributions to our culture. I want to send love to the Simmons, Ross and Jacobs families, immediate and extended, especially their young children who will have to navigate life without the physical presence of their fathers. We are on the socials. You can find Summit at Hip Hop Chronicle and I can be found at I Am Kinetic, and that's Kinetic with a K. And if you can't find us by now, you know what Summit would say. We'll be back next week to continue the full-time Jack move. And until then, peace.